From WNYC, this is The Sporkful.
Recently, a listener in Utah got in touch with us here at The Sporkful. Here's what he had to say.
Hi, Dan. This is Ben calling from Kaysville, Utah. And I would really like your help with something. I'm a lover of food, and I love going out to restaurants, and I love cooking food. But I'm Mormon, and I don't drink alcohol, which means that I feel like I'm not really taken seriously as a lover of food. Because when you go to the restaurant, there's the nice drinks to have with dinner, which are the adult drinks, which are the alcoholic drinks. And then there are the little kid drinks to have with dinner. And so I feel like I am being sort of shunted away off to the kids' table. And so I'm wondering if you have any advice as far as good, tasty adult drinks that aren't alcoholic, but that can pair well with different foods. I'd really appreciate your help, and I hope to hear back from you soon. Thanks very much. Bye.
Well, this is a great question, Ben. And this week on The Sporkful, I'm going to get you an answer. Around the time you reached out, I was at Galco's Soda Pop Stop in L.A., where they have tons of exotic flavors of soda for kids and grown-ups alike. I talked with the owner, John Neese, and I got to tell you, this guy, I mean, I have never met anyone in my life so psyched up about soda. He has 750 different varieties of it. He has 68 kinds of root beer. Okay, here he is walking me through the store.
This right here that's labeled Black Cherry, this is from the people at Dublin. They made Dr. Pepper for 120 years. When you taste it, it's better than any Dr. Pepper. Anytime I want a summer day, I take the plantation-style mint julep.
Rose petal soda?
Yes, and it tastes like roses. It's very light, very delicate. Ouzon. And
like
I just
went,
like ouzo.
Right.
Yeah, the people are Greek that make
it's an espresso. They say espresso cola.
Well, this one is made with pecans rather than peanuts. I remember when we got the Americana Huckleberry in. Mr. Cucumber became the soda of the year.
And it according to who?
Here. According to Beverage World Magazine, 2010. It started here, and the first lady tried it, goes, oh, this isn't what I was expecting at all. It's actually good.
So John's a real character, and we've got a lot more with him to come. I'll try that rose soda. I'll ask him which of his 68 root beers is the best one. And I'll learn why soda carbonated with dry ice is so much better, even though it's almost impossible to find, except at John's store. Plus, we'll nerd out on language. How do we end up with all these different words for soda? Or, as you may call it, pop, or coke, or tonic, or belly wash? Stick around. This is The Sporkful. It's not for foodies, it's for eaters. I'm Dan Pashman. Galco's Old World Grocery and Galco's Soda Pop Stop are basically two names for the same store, John Neese's store. Now, it began as an Italian grocery in 1897. John's father joined as a partner in 1940, and eventually he bought the place from Galco. John's parents worked there into their 90s. They actually celebrated their 70th wedding anniversary at the store. And as a kid, John bagged groceries there. And he did it for just one reason.
When I was a little kid, you know, we didn't have sodas. We never had a soda in the refrigerator at home. I went to work as a little kid with my father so I could have a soda.
Now John's 72. He's been working at the store for pretty much his entire life. When he took over for his parents, he decided it was time to take the store in a new direction. He put the focus on soda.
The neighborhood was changing. There were no more Italians in the neighborhood, and those that were around didn't cook anymore. And on top of that, the chain stores bought the distribution channels for the little markets. They closed them all down and jacked all the prices up about $10, $15 a case. And within a five-year period, all the little mom and pops were gone, and they could charge whatever they want. Our business is primarily done with little independent bottlers. We're not mainstream. You know, you're not going to find a Coca-Cola in this establishment or a Pepsi.
One of the things that I love about walking through these aisles is the labels.
Oh, yeah.
These labels are so beautiful, and there's such variation in them. What do you think makes for a great soda bottle label?
Something that'll stand out and people will recognize. For example, you know, Moxie. I think Moxie, just because of the color in the label, the orange and the dark, it's either black or dark blue. I mean, that thing just pops out.
And you got Moxie established 1884. You got new grape soda over here since 1921. Oso butterscotch root beer since 1946. They've been around. I mean, this is some real, this is like a soda museum.
Well, I hope it's not a museum. The people come in here to taste them.
Well,
I mean,
it's an active participation museum.
Okay, that's it. It's an interactive museum.
And when you're deciding what to stock, is that pretty much... John tastes it. If he likes it, we're going to stock it.
If I like it, we're going to stock it. Yeah, that works pretty well.
Yeah.
Like the Red Ribbons, those come out of Pittsburgh, and they go back to 1904, and they're still operating. They are on a pinpoint carbonated, which means they use dry ice. That's a real old way of making sodas, but they're true to their roots. Look at, and then...
I want to hear more about that. What does dry ice do in terms of making soda?
When you use dry ice... The dry ice breaks down; it gives off the CO2. You get a real fine carbonation. Not only that, but when you use CO2 from dry ice, it doesn't go flat in an hour. It'll actually stay carbonated for 3 or 4 or 5 hours.
Really? Can I try that one?
Yeah, we can try it.
You know what we should do? We should get a shopping cart.
We can do that.
Let's get a shopping cart so that I can buy some soda while we're walking.
Yeah, like they have different flavors, but this one's are almond. So we have a basket. Do you like almonds?
I do.
Okay. Then we're going to try this one right here.
All right. Which one are we starting? Yeah, lighter flavors first. Okay, great.
Rose.
There you go. This is Sweet Blossom Rose Petal Soda. This is bottled in Romania or made by a Romanian guy?
Here, but Illy's from Romania.
All right. Oh, my God. That's so good.
Isn't that good? It's something you wouldn't expect from a soda. It's not perfumey at all.
Right, right.
And very delicate. And it's very good the way it comes out. You ready for the cucumber?
Yeah, let's do cucumber.
Okay. Okay, now this is the cucumber.
Oh, wow. I mean, that's cucumber.
That's made from real cucumbers.
I like the cucumber. I think that the rose is more one that I would just drink all the time. The cucumber, I feel like, it's just so funny. Like, cucumber has become this really trendy thing to mix in cocktails with gin and vodka. And it's like, just buy this soda and pour liquor into it.
And that's true. You can do that if you like. And a lot of people, that's exactly what they do with it.
Now, this is the one that has been carbonated using dry ice.
Yes.
And you say that makes for it, the carbonation lasts longer. And I can see those bubbles.
See the bubbles in it? The little fine bubbles?
Okay, so now I'm tasting. This is Red Ribbon Soda Works Almond Cream Soda. Red Ribbon established 1904. Okay, here we go. Oh, man. You can totally tell the difference.
You can. You can tell it. The fine carbonation. And most people today don't even know about that. They don't even know sodas are still made that way. There's very few bottlers. It's a very expensive way of making sodas.
Can you describe the spectrum of carbonation from the smallest? How much variety is there from one end of the spectrum to the other?
You remember, today, most sodas are very high carbonated because, one, it saves syrup, and, two, plastic and aluminum cans leak. They have about a 3-month shelf life, and then they're gone. And that's the way they're made. This one right here will stay that way. The way it goes in is the way it comes out. And it's good for, you know, a couple of years. Today, root beers are very creamy. You know, root beers were never creamy before. They were always very light and delicate. And as we've gotten away from using sassafras, bark oils, and things like that, they've become sweeter and creamier.
So root beer actually really is any soda made from the root of a plant.
Roots, barks, and herbs. That's
what it
is.
Roots, barks, and herbs.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it could be anything. It could have birch beer in it. It could have sarsaparilla in it. Originally, a lot of root beers had sassafras in them.
All right, so now this one, Oso Butterscotch Root Beer since 1946.
He feels that everybody should have a choice, and he makes like probably 4 different root beers.
Oh, this one is ridiculous. I mean, I'm a butterscotch guy.
Oh, okay. So there you go. That's why he does them the way he does them.
Wow. This is literally like someone melted butterscotch candy and poured it into root beer.
That's it. The number one question I get is,
what is your best root beer? And I say, well, after you taste them all, let me know. Because you can't. I mean, I made that mistake one time of telling a lady that I thought a root beer was good. She came back 2 weeks later and told me it was the worst root beer she's ever tasted. And like, it just what happened to you right now. You like butterscotch. You tasted it, and bang, that's it. So when you're getting somebody who's using really, really good ingredients, you will know. You will taste the flavor. It'll go pop. And that's the way Coca-Cola used to be.
Right.
Not anymore, but that's the way they used to be.
Speaking of the way things used to be and the way things are, there is something nostalgic about soda. Like, it's sort of like people talk about comfort food.
Yes.
It's sort of like a comfort drink.
Well, it is. And everybody that you talk to, and most of the people that come in here, especially old-timers, they can tell you exactly where they were and what they were doing when they had their first soda. And you can't do that with a lot of other things. But you know where your first soda was. Oh, boy.
One controversial issue in the soda community.
Yes.
I noticed that you go by the name Galco's Soda Pop Stop.
Stop, yes.
Do you call it, normally, do you call it soda? Do you call it pop, or you call it soda pop?
It depends what part of the country you come from. If you're in the Midwest, it's pop. Oh. Out here, it's soda pop.
And that's your preference.
And it could be a tonic in New England. It could be, yeah. That's what most people out here would call it. They'd call it a soda pop.
Okay.
Or a soda, something like that.
Do you have a personal preference?
No. As long as I can taste it, it doesn't matter. I don't care what you call it.
Yeah. All right, well, John Neese, Galco's Soda Pop Stop and Galco's Old World Grocery, thanks so much for having me.
Well, thank you very much for stopping by. It was a pleasure. I'm glad you had a chance to try a few things you haven't tried before.
People come from all over the world to shop at Galco's, but if you can't make it there, most of John's sodas are available through his website, sodapopstop.com. Now, as to the correct nomenclature, well, John's a pretty magnanimous guy, but you may know that some people take the battle between soda and pop pretty seriously. It started as soda pop. Soda comes from the sodium, often added to reduce acidity, and pop, well, comes from the sound it makes when you open it. So, how did the term split? Why did the Northeast get soda and the Midwest get pop? And how did the South end up calling all sodas Coke? Coming up, I'll ask a linguist. And remember Ben, our Mormon caller from the start of the show? He specifically asked for pairings. So I'm going to get him on the phone with John Neese from Galco's and let John offer some custom-tailored soda recommendations. I can't wait to hear what John is going to come up with. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Sporkful from WNYC. I'm Dan Pashman. It's time now for a semi-regular feature here on the show that we call Nerding Out. Beep boop bop bop beep 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 boop beep beep boop boop. That's our homemade sound effect, John. As you may have noticed listening to this episode, I call it soda. I grew up in New Jersey. But if you grew up somewhere else in the U.S., you may call it pop, soda pop, tonic, or Coke, even when it's not Coke. So where do these different terms come from? Joining me now to nerd out on language is John McWhorter. He teaches linguistics at Columbia University. He's the author of Our Magnificent Bastard Tongue, The Unhold. He's the author of Our Magni... It's very hard to read when you have a linguistics professor sitting across from you.
We don't judge.
All right, so your books are Our Magnificent Bastard Tongue, The Untold History of English, and The Language Hoax, Why the World Looks the Same in Any Language.
That's
Hi, John.
Right. Hi.
So we need to get this off the bat. Where are you from originally?
I am originally from Philadelphia.
And what did you grow up calling it?
Soda.
Can you lay out roughly what are the geographic boundaries of these different terms?
It's interesting. Soda is what you say if you're from the Northeast, if you are from California. And interestingly, if you're from a certain patch in the Midwest, Chicago, Missouri, my wife is from St. Louis, she says soda. But in general, if you are from the rest of the Midwest or the Northwest, then you are a pop person. And if you're from the South, then you say Coke. Those are the three big contenders.
Friends of mine who grew up in Chicago years ago and have been there a long time, they still call it pop. So is that more like the influence of Northeasterners leaving the Northeast and moving to cities in the Midwest? Is that what's happening there?
There's a balance in Chicago, and it seems likely that it's partly because there are language changes and language fashions that tend to jump from city to city rather than just from one small town to the next. And since Chicago is part of that Northeastern nexus, you might expect something like that.
And what about soda pop? Where do we hear and see that?
Soda pop is actually a rather archaic term, and it's where soda and pop come from. The way it actually goes is this. This is something that's more fun than it's going to sound like. Basically, soda pop would originally have been pronounced soda pop. That's how these words that are two words begin. So, for example, Juicy Fruit Gum. I was watching an episode of Sergeant Bilko from the 50s the other day, and Bilko called it Juicy Fruit because it was newer. Now we say Juicy Fruit. The accent always shifts as something gets older. So originally it would have been have a soda pop. Now, for some people, naturally that would have been shortened to pop, have a pop. But then as it becomes soda pop instead of soda pop, then if you shorten it, you're probably going to say soda. So in some places, the scale tipped one way, and some places it tipped the other. Soda pop is something I don't think anybody outside of a marketer would say now. But soda pop had two children, soda and pop. And so that's where we are now.
But now in a lot of parts of the South, they call all types of soda Coke. Like you could order in a restaurant, you could say, I'll take a Coke. And the server would say, what kind? And you would say, Sprite. Mm-hmm. Which to me makes very little
sense. Completely counterintuitive.
Right, but do we know how that came to be in the South?
Yeah, it's interesting. With Coke, you're seeing another one of these common language change processes where something that's specific ends up having a more generic meaning. Coke starts out as a specific kind of soda. It's very popular. And so after a while, a natural drift would be to start thinking of all sodas as Cokes.
Is the reason why that has happened in the South in particular, does it have to do with the fact that Coke is based in the South, or do we know why that is?
You know, maybe it might have something to do with Coca-Cola's roots in Atlanta, but it may just be, and people hate this kind of non-explanation, it may just be, let's call it serendipity. You would predict probably that there would be somebody somewhere in the country who would be calling all sodas Coke. The fact that it's in the South, maybe that's connected to Atlanta, but it could just be that that happened to be where it took hold for no particular reason.
With regard to Coke, this is more of a grammar question for you. But when the word Coke is used to describe soda generically, not the brand Coca-Cola, should it be capitalized?
That's interesting. I've never thought about it. And, of course, standards and preferences will differ. My preference would be that the capitalized version is restricted to actual Coca-Cola, and that then you use lowercase for this generic soda term.
And what about tonic?
To be honest, actually, there's no one region where tonic is said. Just randomly, that's something that some people say in some places. There is another term for soda that you and I probably have never heard used live, but it's pretty common, which is belly wash. And there's a slightly humorous tinge to the term, but it's also pretty generic. So that's one term that you can definitely see.
Is there a specific type of soda pop that triggered that name? Like, was there ever like a soda that was marketed as like, it'll clean out your insides? Like,
no, but if you look at the dialect atlases and the quotes about belly wash, then you can see that there is a certain notion that this stuff isn't very good for you. And so it'll wash out your belly and maybe, you know, have some sort of effect on the other end.
Right.
And after a while, people are actually just calling it belly wash casually.
Well, John McWhorter teaches linguistics at Columbia University. He's the author of Our Magnificent Bastard Tongue, The Untold History of English, and The Language Hoax, Why the World Looks the Same in Any Language. Thanks so much, John.
Thank you, Dan.
At this point in the show, I want to bring it back to where we began, to Ben, our Mormon listener in Utah, who we heard from at the start of the show. I hope that in hearing all the wonderful adult varieties of soda that John Neese talked about, I hope Ben felt inspired. But he said he wanted pairings. So Joining me now by phone from Kaysville, Utah, is Ben Abbott. Hi, Ben.
Hi, Dan.
And joining me on the line from Galco's Soda Pop Stop in Los Angeles is the one and only John Neese. Hey, John.
Hi, how are you?
Great. John, meet Ben. Ben, meet John.
Hi, John. Nice to meet you.
Very nice to meet you, too.
So, John, you know, I had a great time hanging out with you at your store. Listeners already heard about all the wonderful things you have going on at Galco's. But I want you to try to help me help Ben. Okay?
Okay.
I've asked Ben to think of three specific and different dishes that are things he might like to eat, and he's going to go through each one to you, and I would love it if you could recommend one or two varieties of soda that you carry in the store that you think would pair with the dishes that Ben's talking about. Can you help us with that?
Well, I'm going to try.
Well, Ben, what is the first food you would like John to pair for you?
All right, John, the first one that I thought of was I wanted to go Italian. So what about a fettuccine Alfredo?
Well, of course you'd want to get a vignette. They're non-alcoholic, but they use the grape juice of the varietal. For example, they use a Pinot Noir grape, and then they cut it with 50% water, so it comes out like a sparkling Pinot Noir, but there's absolutely no alcohol in it. You're not getting the fermentation. All you're getting is the flavor of the grape. And with these three grapes, they have a drier finish, so they go very well with any food you select. And they are absolutely, I mean, these people are right on the niche for restaurant pairings.
That sounds great. Ben, what do you think of that?
I mean, that sounds awesome, because that's my biggest complaint, is that it's, you know, the non-alcoholic things are sugary, sweet, syrupy, fizzy kids' drinks. I mean, don't get me wrong. I mean, I love me some root beer, but as far as, like, pairing with a meal, that sounds like a whole new world that I'd be excited to explore.
Great. John, what was the name of that brand again?
The name of the brand is Vignette, V-I-G-N-E-T-T-E, Wine Country Sodas. And they come out of, I believe they're out of Berkeley.
All right. That sounds great. Ben, what's the next dish you want John to pair for you?
I started with Italian, and I'm from California, and so the next one I want to ask about is Mexican food, enchiladas with a side of beans and rice.
Well, when I think about Mexican food, I also think about the drinks that are native to the country, like the tamarindo. And there's that brand out there, Jaritos, and they're pretty common. And I will tell you, they're natural-flavored sodas, the Jamaica, the tamarindo, those type of things, are very good with any kind of Mexican food.
John's talking about tamarindo, which is a tamarind-flavored soda that is it Mexican or Latin American? The brand is called Jaritos?
Jaritos is a Mexican brand.
So how does that sound?
That sounds great. It's funny. As soon as he said it, I was like, of course.
Well, you know, they also have a brand there called Cidral Mundet. And Cidral Mundet is an apple soda, and I've been by their plant, and I've seen like seven of those big bin cars, rail cars, lined up with apples, all apples. So I know they're using real apples in their apple soda, and that's about as good as they get. That one and the Sinodial, that brand, that is probably the best sangria-style soda I've ever tasted, and it is delicious.
There you go, Ben, sangria-style soda. What a world we live in. All right, Ben, one more for us.
Okay. Man, I feel like the pressure's on now.
Have a soda.
All right, so I'm going to do this one. So at Thanksgiving, my family makes a drink called Mormon Champagne. And of course, since moving to Utah and meeting a whole bunch of other Mormons, none of them have ever heard of this, so it may be kind of a misnomer. But we make our Mormon champagne by freezing grape juice in the ice cube trays and then putting a couple of cubes into a glass of ginger ale. And so as the grape cube slowly melts, the grape juice mixes with the ginger ale. And that taste of the slowly melting grape juice with the ginger ale, to me, is as Thanksgiving as turkey and stuffing, as anything else. That, to me, is the taste of the holidays. What I wanted to ask John is if he has any recommendations that are either similar to that or maybe something in a completely different direction that I never would have considered that would go well with, I mean, yes, Thanksgiving dinner, but just basic Americana, heavy meat and potatoes type food.
John, what do you say?
I'm saying I have just what you're looking for, and it's called Champagne-o. And they used to call it champagne, but the French government kept sending them all these nasty letters, said they were going to sue them, and they said they were too small to get sued, so they just changed the name to Champagne-o, and now they don't have any problems.
How do you spell that, John?
Champayno.
And who makes it?
This is made by Natrona Bottling Company, and I will tell you, it is very, very limited. When they do it, it is wonderful.
And Natrona, they're in Pittsburgh?
Yeah, they're outside of Pittsburgh. They're a little tiny bottler, like I said. They go back to 1904.
And so am I right to say, John, that it's roughly speaking like a non-alcoholic champagne?
That's what they were playing on when they came out, and they came out during World War II because the sugar rations were cut to all the bottlers. And in order to stretch the sugar rations, they came out with a dry soda.
It sounds pretty cool, I got to say.
Well, they actually use a pinpoint carbonator, which is really different. You know, they use dry ice. They actually allow the dry ice to break down. I've been there. I've seen it.
Oh, are these the same people that that I tried that the almond soda with the dry ice? Oh, Ben, you got to get this one. And, Ben, with the dry ice carbonation, the bubbles are so much finer and more delicate. Like, I never realized how abrasive the carbonation in mass-market sodas are until I had the one that John gave me that was made with the dry ice. And it's just sublime. You got to check it out. All right, well, Ben Abbott in Kaysville, Utah, and John Neese from Galco Soda Pop Stop in Los Angeles, thanks so much to both you guys.
Oh, well, thank you very much for inviting me to participate.
Thank you, Dan, and thank you, John.
To see photos of some of the most beautiful soda bottle labels that I found at Galco's, head over to Sporkful.com. Yes, soda bottle label photo gallery, people. It's a deep dive here on the Sporkful, all right? I'll also link to where you can order John's sodas online. Again, that's Sporkful.com. Coming up next week on the show, we get ready for the Super Bowl. I'll talk about the search for perfection in wings and love with the man behind the excellent documentary, The Great Chicken Wing Hunt.
I'm a little bit surprised that we haven't found more people doing great things with wings. In a way, it mirrors like a lot of things in life. Most people aren't trying that hard. Most people don't care that much about what they're doing. I feel old saying that, but like, it's my experience.
It's not only about chicken wings. I think it's not about chicken wings. It's about like fulfilling your dreams.
This show is a production of WNYC and The Sporkful. It's produced by Anne Sanny. Our web writers are Talia Ralph and Alight Trong. Special thanks to Chris Bannon. Until next time, I'm Dan Pashman, reminding you to eat more, eat better, and eat more better. Now, I'm going to get me some belly wash.